Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, the pre-Thanksgiving edition. And Terry Savage is here. Terry, welcome to the program.
Glad to be back.
Terry, of course, an expert on personal finance, and you are one of the things I'm grateful for this year.
Oh, thank you, and it goes the same way.
So nice working with you as we have. And I just have to ask, though, are you cheating on me?
What? Why might I? Would I cheat on you?
I turned
Never.
On Channel 9 this morning.
Oh,
and saw
well,
you.
It's all in the WGN family. On Wednesday mornings, I'm on Channel 9 around 9 o'clock hour.
Talking to Larry Potash. And,
yeah, well,
makes
Robin,
me a little,
yeah.
I'm a little uncomfortable with that, but we'll
Oh,
continue.
Yeah, well, the Tribune likes it, and the Tribune is syndicating my column nationally now, so it goes all over the country. So it's kind of an exciting thing that's been going on for about a year.
So if I asked you to choose, you probably wouldn't be able to do that.
Cause... Well, no, there, you have a distinct advantage. Okay? I get up, I get my hair perfect, I put on makeup, and I go on WGN TV on Wednesday mornings. But when I come over here, I walk up Michigan Avenue. If the wind's blowing, I go, oh, well.
And you're much more comfortable then, aren't
I'm very
you?
Relaxed.
All right, let's go shopping then. One of the columns you wrote this week has to do with holiday gifts for kids. And we talked last week a little bit about that stockpile.com.
Exactly.
Where
That's
you can give part of a stock
it.
To a
yeah.
kid.
I do this every year. I come up with ideas. Some of them you've heard before, and some of them are new. And they're all up in a column at terrysavage.com. But let me give you three or four gifts that you can give, and you can actually do it online. It'll save you from going through the holiday crowds. So my number one favorite, and this would be kids, I guess, 6, 7 years old, is the Money Savvy Piggy Bank.
Yep.
I'm going to give you a website. It's MSGen, Money Savvy Generation, MSGen.com. And a Chicago entrepreneur, Susan Beecham, came up with this idea at least 15 years ago. So I've done this every year. And now she's been awarded the Parents' Choice, like, all-time gold award because it's been one of the top Parents' Choice gift ideas for kids. It's a four-chambered plastic piggy bank, translucent, with save, spend, donate, and invest, four different chambers. So the kids put coins in, and they get some ideas about what do you do with money.
Well, that's what I like, too, that it not just they're not just saving money. There's sort of a motivation for donating, you know, the chamber.
Exactly. So you could, if you go to church or pass the plate or something like that, at
so
least
they know
you
know early
you're putting
on
money away.
It's expected. It's going to be part of their
exactly.
life.
Exactly. It's $18.95. You buy it online at www.msgen.com. And while you're at that website, she has another thing there for, I would say, young teens, 11, 12, 13. It's called the OMG. If you don't know what that means, oh my God, we're very old and out of it. OMG, but the official money guide, OMG, for teens. It's a little booklet with cartoons, but if you are going to mail your grandchild a check or something like that, go get this book or get it online at msgen.com. I know I'm doing a commercial, but I love these things. And put the check or the money inside this book. So this is the perfect time to start teaching lessons about money. And it's a great little kind of cartoony, but kind of very profound book that teens will not think it's talking down to them.
I want to get to the iPhone. There's an app, too, that
yes.
sounds pretty cool. But before I do, one of the other things you wrote about were the 529 college savings plans.
Oh, yeah.
Now, so you can do that for a grandchild or
Absolutely.
A child. But you can't do it for just any kid, right? You got to be
related. Oh, no, you can do it. I did it for my nephew when he
oh,
was born.
Oh, you can.
Yes. If you want to open an account. Look, there's a great website. You don't have to use the Illinois plan. I'm not into the Illinois plan. You could use any state's plan. The child can use it for any college in any state, and any child in the family can use it. So pick one of the plans that's probably managed by Vanguard or Fidelity because they have the lowest cost. If you want to compare and find the best plans with their investment performance and their low cost, go to savingforcollege.com. You can open a grandparents. I mean, if you're really wealthy, this is great estate planning tool. You can combine 5 years of the $14,000 gift allowance for each child, and both grandparents could do it. You can put a lot of money away, enough to pay for college, without any having to do it in your will. It's out of your estate. By the way, if the kid turns out to be a real flake and never sends you a birthday card, you could take the money back, paying a penalty of 10% and taxes on all the gains. But the children...
That'll be an education for the kid, right?
So the children can use a 529 college savings plan. All the money grows tax-free. Go to savingforcollege.com to check them out.
All right, tell me about this iAllowance app, because it's like we use our phone now to do everything, things that we don't really need to necessarily use our phone for, like berating a kid into cleaning his room. But this app will make it a little easier.
So here's the thing about allowances and about whether you want to attach them to chores or not. Parents, I remember doing this. You know, it was a couple of dollars a week then, but you forget to have the couple of dollars and the thing kind of goes astray. If you wanted to reward kids either in dollars or in stars and you want to set up a list of chores, you go to the App Store and download iAllowance. It's an app. It's $4.95. It's worth it. It can apply if you have four or five kids in the family. And you set up a list of chores. They agree with you. They put up their list of chores. And when they've done them, you exit out. Now, you can either give them, you know, 50 cents for taking out the dog each time, or you could give them stars. It doesn't have to be a money thing, but it puts work and earning and responsibility, instead of putting up the, you know, hand-drawn chart on top of the refrigerator. They're all app crazy anyway.
Well, but you know, I do like it because you're right about that. It does unravel. I mean, I'm not in charge of allowance in my house. My wife Sharon does. But, you know, are there sometimes it happens, well, did we do it this week? Did we not?
Like, do you remember? It's like taking pills. Did you really take it this? I don't know. Right. They say they've done 15 million chores. I mean, you know, they're tracking this up online. They're not what you ask your kids to do. And completed 10 million allowance payments. And it's really, I did it. It's simple to do, to download and follow the instructions. You get the kids involved. And all of a sudden, well, I think taking out the trash is worth 50 cents. Okay, I think walking the dog. I think making your bed. I think, you know, and so you can make a whole list. They have suggested chores, but you can add your own.
That is iAllowance, and check that out. That's an app. Right. And, you know, in the springtime, I talked a couple times with a few different guests about this idea that you sell in May and go away when it comes to the stock market.
Before we leave this topic, I just want to mention this other thing that we talked about briefly before. There are two new apps, Stockpile, STOCKPILE.com, and SparkGift.com. These are, now, you remember I always used to tell you how to buy a few shares of stock for your kids? Stockpile now, if you go into Toys R Us or in Kmart, you'll see gift cards. And with different stock names on them. You can buy them in $25, $50, or $100 denominations. And if you don't want to go to the store, go to stockpile.com. You can buy it online. It's a few dollars to buy it. You email this, if you aren't giving the actual gift card, to the parents or the child, and they get to choose. You may have thought, oh, I'm going to buy them $50 worth of, I don't know, Amazon. And they say, oh, no, I'm not into Amazon. You know, Nike's hot now because it's got shoes or whatever it might be. So they get to pick the stock. It's priced at the day that the child or anybody exercises it. You can buy more, up to $1,000, actually, if you do it online, stockpile.com. And a Chicago company that's also doing something similar called sparkgift.com. So stock gift for your grandchildren.
All right, we'll do that. And so, but as I was saying earlier, that, you know, a lot of times they see sell in May and go away at the stock market. Well, if you do that, there must be a time to come back. And maybe we're here. We'll talk about that with Terry Savage coming up. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Producer Yun Tai has brought his bass into the studio with the bumps, as you can hear. Terry Savage is here. All right, so Terry, actually, I got this idea from a column you wrote this week. But, you know, in buy or sell in May and go away. That's what everyone says. And if that works, then there must be a time to buy.
Is this the time to buy? Okay. So this is really interesting. I take no credit for this. The Stock Traders Almanac first uncovered it. And Jim Stack of Invest Tech Research, which happens to be my favorite newsletter, and probably it's gotten the Hulbert Award for the best newsletter over the last 30 years. I've been reading it forever. InvestTech.com. Give him credit. InvestTech.com. Here's what he does. He compares two investors. This is going to be an astounding number. You're going to have to listen closely about when you buy stocks and when you sell them.
Because you're not going to believe it.
You're not going to believe it, right. These two investors started in 1960 with $10,000 invested in an S&P 500 stock market index fund with dividends reinvested. So you're just index fund. Investor A only own stocks during the period from November 1st through April 30th of each year, while investor B only owns stocks in the period from May 1st through October 31st each year. Okay, today the portfolio of investor A, the one that invested November through end of April, would be worth $640,262. The portfolio of investor B in the same index fund, but who invested, by the way, in the reverse, May
in the
through
summer.
October, in the summer, his portfolio it would be worth only $29,272. So let me give you those numbers again. $640,000 versus $29,000. In that 55 years, investor A had a 63-fold increase in his portfolio, while investor B barely tripled the initial value, thus leading to the idea that you want to own stocks during the period of November 1st through April 30th each year. Now, will it happen again? It's not a one-year forecaster. This is a long, long-term trend. And if you want all the details, you can either go to terrysavage.com and read the column, or InvestTech, I-N-V-E-S-T-C-H, research.com, and you get a free sample copy
letter. Maybe there should have been investor C there as well. I would like to see what
who
investors
just bounced around.
No, who bought the same fund on the same day and didn't move it for.
You know, I should ask him. I'm sure that, of course, you would come out way, way, way far ahead over just being in the worst periods in the market. And when I used to, in my speeches, I used to have a thing about if you were right or wrong only 10 times about when to be in or out of the market, you would have lost all the gains
right.
of the last 60 years. I think
so.
The,
what that is, that's a bright, shiny, bowed box in the window
yes.
that maybe we shouldn't buy.
Well, I think the gift is that you start investing when you're young because time is more valuable than money. Not until you're older do you realize money is not the scarce resource. Time is. And so as we go back to our gifts for children, the best thing you can do for them is either open a 529 college savings, go to Stockpile. You know, you could buy ETFs there, so you could buy the, quote, whole market through these gift cards, stockpile.com, and get kids started. I lived down on the trading floor. If I were a great trader, I'd still be down there. I'm much better talking about it. And I decided that over the long run, the way to go was never get scared out and never get too greedy. Just keep investing regularly. And I can look back now and say, guess what? That works.
Well, you're very good talking about it, and I'm glad you're here to do it.
Thank you.
Now go put your turkey in the oven.
25-pound turkey.
You
that's
can
tomorrow
do it.
Morning early.
Happy Thanksgiving, Terry.
You too.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. This lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, ever find yourself in a situation where you do something every year, you did it last year, might as well do it this year, and then all of a sudden, maybe it doesn't make sense anymore, even if it did in the beginning. That's kind of where we are, maybe, with Black Friday. Jean-Pierre Dubé is a professor of marketing at the University of Chicago at the Booth School of Business, and he joins us now on a phone line. Professor, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So you talk about this idea that we are in a prisoner's dilemma when it comes to Black Friday. Can you sort that out for me a little bit?
Sure. What makes this a peculiar setting on Black Friday, and just to make sure we're clear, the aspect of Black Friday that's a prisoner's dilemma is that all the competing retailers are running very aggressive discounts on Black Friday, but the net effect is probably negative, meaning that all of these retailers would all be mutually better off if they could all agree not to launch discounts on Black Friday. And why does this lead to a prisoner's dilemma? Well, let's imagine that I'm the only one who's going to launch a discount on Black Friday. Well, we all know that by now consumers are starting to think about Christmas shopping the day after Thanksgiving. You know, we get the Thanksgiving holiday out of the way. We're starting to plan Christmas. And lots of people have a four-day weekend, or if not even a five-day weekend on Thanksgiving, which means it's a great time for people to go shopping. So there's this big pent-up demand for Christmas shopping on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. If I'm the only one who can run a discount, I'm going to win over a lot of demand. So I'm going to advertise, I'm going to discount, and the hope is that I'm going to draw a lot of those holiday shoppers to my store. So if no one else is doing it, it's clear that I would want to do this to try and win over this pool of shoppers. Now let's imagine everybody's doing it. Well, if everybody's advertising a discount on Black Friday, I have to do this. I need to do this just to defend myself, because if I'm the only one not advertising a Black Friday discount, well, then I'm not going to get any business. All the consumers are going to go to the other retailers who have better deals. So they can see that it's in my interest to do a discount if I'm the only one doing it, but it's also in my interest to do it if everyone is doing it.
So what started out as something attractive ends up as sort of a trap.
Well, that's kind of it, because no matter how you slice it, it's always my quote-unquote best response to run this aggressive Black Friday discount. But if everybody's running these discounts, there's really no net effect on revenues. You know, we're all going to split up the consumers the way we would have anyhow. But worse, and this is where the dilemma part comes from, I've got employees working extra hours, because if we look in the last few years, Black Friday sales have started to creep further and further forward in time, so that stores are now opening in the morning on Thanksgiving Day. It's becoming almost like a satire of a Black Friday sale, which means I'm paying overtime, I have extra, my stores open longer, I'm forcing employees to come to work when they should really be at home resting with their families, and what's probably one of the oldest holiday traditions in North America. And worse, you know, I'm encouraging customers or potential customers to get into their cars and drive around and shop after they've just spent the day eating and drinking heavily, which is probably not the best time to be driving around in icy road conditions.
Well, you just moved into the second area I'd like to talk about then. So we can talk about the prisoner's dilemma for a store owner, but let's talk about the net benefit to society when it comes to Good Friday. I mean, is this a net plus, or I should say, you argue that it's probably a net minus when it comes to society, going out and shopping on Thanksgiving and the day after Thanksgiving?
It's got to be a net minus. It's like devoid of culture. If anything, it's worse than that. It's not just about people driving drunk or shopping instead of being with their families. We hear these horror stories now every year about the fights and mobs at the stores. It's just couldn't be further from the spirit of holiday shopping to have people fighting and beating each other up over you know, long lineups and getting at the door crasher deals. So it's just completely not in the spirit of holiday shopping at all.
It used to be when I was a kid that the men would avoid their families on Thanksgiving by watching football. Now perhaps the women avoid their families by going shopping.
Well, as long as nobody was fighting and they weren't getting in their cars drunk, that's still better for society than the holidays, than the Thanksgiving Thursday trip to the mass discounter or retail store.
But in seriously,
there's another sense in which that it's not a net benefit to consumers. I'm not talking about society, but consumers, and that's because studies recently have shown by tracking the last few years of price data for the weeks leading up to Thanksgiving, that in fact, Black Friday sales are not the best deals in the holiday season. That people are actually getting the best deals the week before Black Friday, especially on store websites. Many stores start doing discounting before Black Friday. And of course, then there's Cyber Monday, when large retailers like Amazon run their big discounts, which all sort of points to the fact that consumers are actually racing out in droves to shop on Black Friday, but they're not actually getting the best deals. This sort of reminds us that consumers just are very poorly informed about prices. We're responding to the sales signs and the promotional advertising without actually verifying that we're really getting the deal we think we are.
All right, so let me just confess. I enjoy Black Friday, and I don't go out shopping for the big deals. But as I was raising my kids, they're college age now, but when they were younger, it was a way that my wife and I would sort of get out for a while. My parents would watch the kids. We would go out into the hustle and bustle and sort of enjoy it, and it became a bit of a tradition there. So maybe for me, if societally it's not a net plus, can it still be a plus for me individually?
It could be. Which day of the week were you going on the Black Friday sale?
Well, we would go out on Friday morning after Thanksgiving.
Friday morning. The problem with Black Friday, and this is the prisoner's dilemma aspect, is that now it's mid-afternoon on Thanksgiving Thursday.
Yeah, well,
I know. If you look over since 2011, more and more retailers have been falling into this trap, and the trap is who can be the first one to open their doors?
So, you know,
and you can see eventually people are going to be opening up at midnight on Wednesday night and calling this the Black Friday sale.
Well, they're already doing it, aren't they? And I wonder, so it seems as if maybe the Friday-ness of it is under attack from a couple of directions, opposite directions. I mean, you've got REI, who says that they're going to let their employees stay home, go skiing, go for a walk, do something like that. And then you've got others on the other end starting their Black Friday deals today. So maybe the Black Friday is going to go away altogether. Do you think that's possible?
Well, we may be, but, you know, if we look, it was only just a few years ago that Macy's did the same thing as REI and said, we're just not opening on Thanksgiving Thursday. That's a holiday. And then the following year, they opened up on Thursday. The question is whether or not REI sells to the kind of consumer that does Black Friday shopping, and it's possible that REI simply doesn't cater to that consumer segment, in which case being closed on Thursday and maybe even being closed on Friday just may not do any harm to them anyhow. But if it does do harm to them, meaning if there's demonstrable loss in store revenues, it will be interesting to see if they can commit to this strategy, or rather this was just a one-time attempt at some marketing and posturing to see if maybe people would reward them somehow for being good citizens. You could think of it as a kind of pro-social marketing.
That's Jean-Pierre Dubé, a professor of marketing at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. All right, Jean-Pierre, on Friday, I'll meet you on Michigan Avenue, buy you some Garrett's popcorn.
Sounds good to me.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim and Orion. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is Wednesday. Is your turkey thawing? Remember, it's not a good idea to leave the turkey out overnight, Scott Kleinberg. It will not thaw that way.
Thanks for the advice.
Scott Kleinberg is here from the Chicago Tribune, writes about social media. I was talking to Bill and earlier and Hannah about this new Li-Fi that you are writing about and telling me about. And so it's hundreds of times faster than Wi-Fi. What's that about?
It is 100 times faster than the average Wi-Fi speed.
Okay, I have no idea. Teach me.
Basically, if the average Wi-Fi speed is somewhere, let's just say around 20 megabits per second, something like that, this can go, you know, into the gigabits per second for sure.
But is it a whole new infrastructure? Is it magic? Or
It would be a whole new way of achieving wireless internet. So anything that you have now wouldn't be compatible with it. I think the thing that's so cool about it is that it uses LED lights, and they apparently blink in the length of time of nanoseconds, so it's imperceptible to the human eye, and that's how it transmits. So it sounds to me like it would be completely different from any kind of router that you see today or that kind of thing. And also, not mentioned in the story, which has to be a part of it, is for all the things that have interference right now with Wi-Fi, you know, how that happens with your cordless phone, your microwave, all this stuff would be completely new, so that wouldn't happen. So it would seem like the speed would actually be as fast all the time.
Well, you just made it easier to understand when you explained that I'd have to buy all new stuff to use it, because
that's
the way it always works with every new technology.
Yes, exactly.
Is this pie in the sky stuff, or is it just around the corner?
It's in testing right now in parts of Europe, and it looks like they're still testing it. It was invented in 2011, and they're doing testing in the lab, but, you know, it sounds like if it was invented in 2011, in 2015, they're getting that far.
So you could download a movie, a feature film.
In full HD in a matter of seconds, 2-3 seconds.
I would love that. All I want to be able to do is to watch Morning Joe at my health club.
There you go.
It doesn't work. So hopefully with new technology, that would pick up a little bit.
This sounds like exactly what you need for that.
Finally, they're doing something I need. You ever hear that all weather people look alike?
Yes.
And it actually was a little bit true this week.
It actually seems true, yes. So there is apparently this $23 dress that sells on Amazon. And apparently all of the meteorologists across the country, the TV meteorologists, are wearing the same dress. And it turns out that somebody did this compilation and found out that there are like 50 meteorologists that are wearing this dress. And there's apparently a Facebook group devoted to this so that they can find things to wear, because there's all kinds of rules that they have. Like, it has to be a certain color because of the camera background, the green screen, and, you know, all these different things. And I guess this is just like the sweet spot, you know, it's like the color's right, the price is right, and they all talk about it. And
so, wait a minute, I thought when I read this, and I think, you know, I saw a TV crawl on it or something too. I thought they were making some kind of statement about the way they're forced to dress, but this is just like a club about finding clothes?
It certainly seems that way. I don't know if there could very well be something in there where they're making a statement about it. That could very well be true. But there's a group that people talk about this stuff, and this is apparently a thing.
So women who are meteorologists or do weather on TV, they, you know, and they do, and it's, you know, they have to dress a certain way, and It's usually a very sexy way, I should say, too. I mean, it really is. It's pretty amazing if you start to focus on it. But so they're sharing, like, so it's a tip line, sort of.
So it seems, yes. And apparently that was, like, the sweet spot thing where this dress is, like, $23.
I love that.
It's such a cool thing to have. I mean, I don't have any kind of support group for the things I wear. You could probably tell. So, you know, I think it's cool.
No, I can think that probably a lot of people dress like you. I'm not sure what the profession is. I'm still trying to match it. We've talked before about Facebook, and they've got this emergency notification that,
yes,
you know, it jumped in and was very helpful in Paris.
Yep.
They got some grief because they didn't do it in Beirut.
Right, when they had the bombing.
Correct. And Zuckerberg was presented with that and seemed to say that they were going to jump on it, wouldn't happen again.
Yes.
And then it happened again.
It happened again right away when they had the hotel kidnapping and crisis in Mali. People were questioning, you know, what happened to the safety alert. And beyond the safety alert, you know, when they had Paris, they had the superimposing of the Facebook profile, so you could have, you know, the Paris flag. There was no flag. All of the things that they said that they would take into deeper consideration, they didn't do. Now, Mark Zuckerberg did come out and say that he wasn't going to talk about every single event,
right,
as being equal. But you would think that 2 or 3 or 4 days after this thing happened and after he made it a point to talk about this, that this might be something that would qualify.
Well, it's a tricky thing for them, too, now, isn't it? Because they have to,
yes,
decide if enough people were killed. Basically, that's what they have to decide.
That really is what they have to decide, because something is happening every day. And for them to have to do it every day, it kind of loses its impact if it's, you know, this constant,
right,
thing. But there are people who don't understand why it's hitting for one and not for the other. And it's a valid question, but then they kind of have to rethink their whole strategy.
Well, so I was thinking when I read it that it's easy for them to turn on the emergency notification. That's not a big deal.
That's the simple part.
But the flag sort of override on your picture and all of that, that becomes a little more difficult.
I would imagine it would be a little more difficult, but I would imagine they probably have a template in place where they can probably do it pretty quickly.
They got some computer guys. They know how to do it.
They probably do. But in this case, you know, it's like if something happens every day and all of a sudden this becomes a regular thing, it doesn't become a special thing, which is what they intended it to be originally.
So I thought my world was complete when I could order my laundry detergent by pressing a button by the washing machine.
Isn't that amazing?
Amazon Dash.
Yeah.
Right? And that's growing. Is that still doing well?
Oh, yeah. And there's more Dash buttons all the time.
And now there's Domino's button?
Yes. It wasn't enough that Domino's lets you order a pizza by texting an emoji. Now there's this little miniature pizza box with a button, and it works by Bluetooth with an app. So basically, you tell you tell them on their website, you know, what your delivery address is, what your favorite pizza is. It has to be your favorite one. And then you have this little pizza box that sits in your kitchen or wherever you want to put it, and you hit it, and your pizza will come.
So whenever you got the hang, so you must pre-order. I mean, you must set the sort of pizza you want.
Yes, because it would be one button press, so
right,
you would have to let them know. Unless there's some kind of way that you can tap it twice, or they can make that happen, that would be cool. But
knock
for now,
three times,
favorite,
like
knock three times for pepperoni,
just,
yes,
like the Tony Orlando and Don song.
Perfect.
All right, Scott Kleinberg. Listen, it was good to see you again. Thanks
good
very much.
You
I hope
too.
You have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Steve. Thanks.
You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.